540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. 1 week ago, the deadliest U.S. wildfire in a century swept across Maui, killing at least 99 people. The fire is still burning in Kula. Hawaii Governor Josh Green on the search in Lahaina.
We got through 25% of the homes in the area, the grid, searching for our lost loved ones. That's accelerating now.
More from CBS's Allison Keyes.
Moody's Investor Service says the estimated insured losses from the Maui wildfires will be at least $1 billion. But survivors waiting to see what's left of their homes aren't thinking about that yet.
I still have loved ones that's trapped, for example, my dad.
And then there are the 3,000 or so missing pets, terrified and traumatized just like their owners. Katie Shannon is at the Maui Humane Society.
We have seen animals come through our shelter that have severe burns.
Allison Keyes, CBS News.
Former President Trump and 18 co-defendants are indicted for allegedly trying to overturn his 2020 election loss in Georgia. CBS's Christian Benavides reports.
Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis pursued the case, charging Trump and 18 of his allies. Trump himself is facing 13 felony counts, including violating Georgia's RICO Act, a racketeering law used to take down major crime organizations.
She can wrap together a lot of activities with a great number of defendants and be able to bring in evidence against one that then spills over onto the others.
The RICO Act charge alone carries a mandatory minimum of 5 years in prison.
A guilty plea in a case related to a January elementary school shooting in Newport News, Virginia. CBS's Jim Crisula with more.
25-year-old Deja Taylor has pleaded guilty to a charge of felony child neglect. It comes 7 months after her 6-year-old son used her handgun to shoot and critically wound his first-grade teacher in a classroom full of children. Prosecutors agreed to drop a misdemeanor charge of reckless storage of a firearm. Taylor faces up to 6 months in jail or prison when she's sentenced in the fall.
New COVID-19 hospitalizations have accelerated for a fourth straight week. CBS's Matt Piper with the latest.
CDC data show 10,320 patients in the U.S. were newly hospitalized with the virus for the week ending August 5th, an increase of more than 14% from the week before. Hospitals in the Southeast are getting hit hardest in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, North and South Carolina, and Tennessee.
In Ukraine, an injured man is pulled out from under rubble after a Russian missile strike on the city of Lutsk. In Lviv, at least 3 people were killed and 19 wounded in overnight strikes. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
With news on WAUK, The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The president's Milwaukee address today mentioned cities and towns across the state and how he thinks his Inflation Reduction Act is helping.
Spending on construction and manufacturing plants that need to be built. Nearly doubled in the last 2 years.
Biden's ongoing tour is aimed at showcasing the legislation at a time when recent polling data reflects a sense of pessimism among voters regarding his economic management. The visit coincides with the forthcoming Republican presidential debate scheduled for August 23rd in Milwaukee. Almost 4 inches in West Allis, 3.5 in Wauwatosa, with Waukesha getting almost 3 inches of rain yesterday. Intersections underwater weren't like that for long, but many are clearing out basements that filled up due to the rapid downpour. The Fox River in the area did rise a little, but levels have subsided. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
Attention taxpayers, ready for some bad news? With $80 billion in new funding from Congress, the IRS has launched their most aggressive hiring campaign ever to ramp up enforcement. If you're ignoring your taxes, don't delay another minute because your paycheck, your bank account, even your home or business could already be at risk. Now, here's the good news. Optima Tax Relief, America's number one tax relief firm, can get to work immediately, helping to protect you from the IRS. IRS. A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau, their tax attorneys and licensed professionals are experts at resolving tax problems. Let them help determine if you qualify for the Fresh Start Initiative or other powerful IRS tax assistance programs. Take control. Call Optima Tax Relief now for a free consultation.
Call 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
Saturdays and Sundays at 1, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturdays and Sundays at 1 on the Civic Media Network and on the Civic Media app.
So-called originalists, textualists are delighted about the decision since it honors the words of the Montana Constitution. You're welcome. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Almost the entire Republican Party indicted yesterday as Fannie Willis indicted Trump and 18 others. But there were 30 unnamed co-conspirators. And that's where the fun begins. Look, for me, the fun is it's kind of a guessing game. Who are these other 30? I still think Lindsey Graham is going to be on that list. Or so I hope. In fact, I saw he could rank as high as number 20. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, again, you know, I don't know that there was a lot of surprise in this. I think the fact that it's such a wide net that she has cast, because understand the differences between what the DOJ did, Jack Smith and the DOJ did, and what Fannie Willis and the folks in Fulton County are doing, completely different. The feds went for something narrow, simple, something they could get through quickly, something they could move on and actually hold someone accountable for. It seems like she wants to get to the bottom of it, wants to hold everyone accountable. Now, understand, the 30 unnamed co-conspirators, those are the rats. Those are the ones who are going to be jumping ship really quick. And I expect even some of the named ones to CYOA. To start jumping and going, especially the lawyers. Lawyers don't like going to jail, especially the lawyers who aren't going to get paid, by the way. I fully expect that. Now, I find it interesting that they use the RICO laws, which I was saying, you know, it seems like a criminal conspiracy, seems like a mob kind of organization. What I find interesting, one of the named conspirators, one of the indicted, Rudy, it's weird. This is the weird thing for me. Because Rudy made his name using the RICO Act against the mob. You know, Rudy was the mob buster for a while and used that. You would think he would know. You would think that he would know being part of that whole big thing that it could be used against him. Now, again, the RICO laws, much broader, much more all-encompassing than the federal laws. So gonna be. Now, this isn't going to happen anytime soon. This is going to be a couple of years, I think. But going to be interesting to see how this eventually finishes up. And if we can wrap this up into
a full story. I want to know who funded it. I want to know who riled the people up. I want to know who the... There's so much here. So much. Now, the other part of this is kind of where it has to be on the state level, because states run elections. And I think that's a big part of why you didn't see the feds jump into the middle of that, because in our country, the election laws are state laws. So these are state laws. What's interesting, what I keep seeing is Mark Meadows, who is a named conspirator, indicted one of the 18. He's trying to get it moved to federal court. Trump is going to want to get it moved to federal court. They want to get it out of the hands of the state courts because, well, they think they got a better chance with people that maybe Trump might have appointed. I think that's kind of it. Now, for me, the state charge is important because regardless of what happens in 2024, if Trump somehow pulls off a victory and becomes president again, not something he can pardon himself for. And Georgia has a weird little thing where governors don't have pardon power. They've got limited, they can make suggestions, I guess. But so he can't get himself out of this. This could be the one that ends up, and I've had a lot of friends going, this is the one that's going to get him locked up. Now, I'm not that certain. We'll see. Again, this is a huge case. And as has been explained to me already, when Willis has done this in the past, has, you know, cast this wide net, what happens is the rats start to jump ship. And I think that's kind of the hope of these 30 unindicted co-conspirators, that they're going to go, hey, I don't have the money to fight this. I don't have the energy, the time. I don't have the ability to fight this. I'm just going to tell the truth. I'm going to come forth and I'm going to point the finger where it belongs, at Trump and the others. So going to be fun, interesting. But Rudy Giuliani right there at the top, he was one. John Eastman, you may remember, Eastman's the guy who, I guess he dreamt up the whole scheme and, you know, put pressure on Pence and did a bunch of that stuff. So Eastman's big part of this, getting his law license taken away. Mark Meadows was one of them. This guy Cheeseborough, who drafted the memo to bring the fake electors along. So this is a multi-pronged kind of, you know, everyone's got a bad idea. And then there's Jeffrey Clark, who was supposed to be, what was it, acting attorney general. They were going to try, my congressman, Scott Perry, pushed him to the forefront here. Jenna Ellis, who, you know, evidently was Rudy's, you know, lapdog, also wrote some memos so that Pence, you know, might block, you know, the election. What's interesting, the rumor going around right now about Jenna Ellis, evidently she must have said something nice about DeSantis. So evidently Trump's PACs aren't going to pay any of her legal bills. So she's going to be on her own because she said something nice about DeSantis. And this is one of those weird things for me as I'm watching this play out. The thing that's amazing to me is the loyalty that people have to Trump, knowing that if they slip up just a little bit, if they say something nice about somebody that offends dear leader, they're out. They're on an island. They're you're fired. And with it comes all of the headaches and all of the problems of massive legal bills. And I remember saying this for a while, going, you know, his past, his record, is that of stiffing people who, I guess, were his friends. And now we're seeing that, you know, as we've known all along, he stiffs everybody. The story broke today that Giuliani, his most loyal henchman, evidently not going to get paid because evidently they had a handshake agreement. And, nothing. Now, are you surprised by it? And the answer should be no. And this is why I think at some point people are going to start turning and quickly. And when it happens, when the door opens and the floodgates go, it's going to be huge. Because all of these people, these lawyers, Sidney Powell, who was all in, she's been indicted. All of the people who were the fake electors, you know, they're indicted now. which I don't understand why they weren't indicted right from the beginning, but this is all part of this. And I'm hoping this is all televised. I'm hoping it's all right out in front, transparent. Now, I do have a problem with the Fulton County Clerk of Courts, because you made me stay up till midnight to get this stuff when you actually did post it on your website earlier in the day. I'm miffed about that. Got to be honest. You could have just said, yeah, made a mistake. It was there. That's it. But no, made me stay up till midnight to find it. Now, fun, something to look forward to on Monday. Coming soon, Trump says he's going to hold a major, major news conference. And this major news conference can be held at Bedminster in New Jersey at his golf course, you know, where his ex-wife is buried. And reports they're not tending to the gravesite very well. And are you surprised? I'm not even a little bit. But evidently, there's going to be a report. And this report is going to, well, I'm going to use his words. He truthed out today a large, complex, detailed, but irrefutable report on the presidential election fraud, which took place in Georgia, is almost complete and will be presented by me at a major news conference at 11 a.m. on Monday of next week in Bedminster, New Jersey, based on the results of this conclusive report. All charges should be dropped against me and others. There will be a complete exoneration. Capital letters. They never went after those rigged the election. They only went after those who fought to find the riggers. The riggers. And the thing is, we know who the riggers were. Brad Raffensperger, one of the riggers. Brian Kemp, one of the riggers. One of the people who threw people off voting rolls. I mean, we know the game. You can go back to, you know, 2004, J. Kenneth Blackwell in Ohio. We're only going to take registrations on 80-pound paper, and all the rest of them we're going to chuck. All of these barriers that Republicans have put in the way of people voting, I think we know who the riggers are. But so we're going to get this big report. Now, here's the weird thing. Some enterprising reporter checked to see if Bedminster was going to be open on Monday. Turns out the golf club will be closed. They're holding a private event, not the big press conference. So you got to wonder, you know, is this one of those things where he got a little news in the cycle, and then, well, you know, he just can't have the big report. Yeah. I would not be surprised. Now, here's the thing, and this is what bothers me. All of this talk, in all seriousness, is getting the dim riled up. My email box full of people very angry, and it's one of those things you're going, have you not been paying attention? Did you not know this was coming? This is the fourth indictment. He's hit for the cycle already. It's not the hat trick anymore. He's hit for the cycle. He's got all of them. And now you've got the whispers of violence coming, because along with the indictment, I guess they released the name of the grand jurors, which there is some chatter on 4chan where the lunatics hang out, that evidently the list of names of jurors of the grand jurors, that's a hit list evidently, and they're about ready to go Turner Diaries on them. That's a threat, so you know that means they're gonna, yeah, you know what they're gonna do. And the thing that gets me is the right will say, no, you know, just like on January 6th, it was a peaceful day. It was a family day. It was a big picnic. It was a party. People were between the ropes. But if you paid attention to their social media, to the 4chans, to the Parler comments, to all of that stuff, the violent rhetoric was ramped up. The heated rhetoric was really ramped up. And that's going to happen as these indictments turn into trials and the more we find out, because that's the only way they're going to keep us, really the only way they're going to keep us from getting the truth is if they can shut it down. Just like the only way they were going to keep Trump in office is if they were to be able to stop Pence from certifying the election, which is what January 6th was all about. It wasn't about, you know, a day of patriotism. Nonsense. They knew why they were there. Every person who went to that rally knew that they were there to stop Pence from certifying the election. Some didn't say, oh, we were just going to protest. But some went there with the idea of any means necessary. And that's the position that sadly we're in. Now, look, here's the thing. This is the thing that blows my, that makes me just furious. I would rather be talking about anything other than Trump. There are so many other things we need to be focused on. But here's the reality. Our democracy is under attack. The threat of losing this wonderful experiment of self-governance is under attack. And this guy is at the center of it. So until he is tried in open court for everyone to see and held accountable, I don't see a way forward. This is the issue of our day. And for those who want to put it this way, we are living history. Which side will you be on? That's my question. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, again, like I said, I would rather be talking about anything other than Donald Trump and the attacks on democracy that are happening right in front of us. Like, for instance, the attack on public education. We are seeing it all across the country, from book bans to, you know, to just, well, you know, Schoolhouse Rock for Nazis. The kind of craziness that is happening around our public schools is a couple fold. One, to get everybody riled up and angry so that we polarize each other, and then to destroy public education and to privatize it. And Florida is at the heart of it, much like Pennsylvania with the charter schools and the cyber charters. But evidently they have this step up program. And I was reading through this article on this step up program and how basically, thanks to tax dollars, they are saving Catholic schools. Religious schools are getting huge amounts of money, which is why these things are being pushed. It's about breaking up the teachers' unions. It's about you know, taking what we used to do for ourselves away, and privatizing it, especially into their churches. And this article goes through how basically the money that they're throwing into this is seriously propping up these schools to where now the enrollment is through the roof. But what I found interesting is one of the nuns that was quoted in this talked about the enrollment at this one school. And they said that they had, you know, the enrollment right around 900 is the constant. And what she said was, is that over the last year, the scholarship money, the payoff, the sweetener from the state, grew from 160 people getting it last year to over 560. Now, as I've been saying for the longest time, the reality is this money is going to people who are already sending their kids to private schools. It's just lining their pockets. And I found it interesting that she just came right out and said it. Yeah, you know, we had 160 people last year who were getting the money. Now 560. And it's just a windfall for them, to be quite frank. And we know that. Now, here's the other part of this. the very people who are pushing for religious education and all of this, you know, who want us to, you know, you gotta read the book, gotta know about the book, are supporting a party that wants to completely ban universal free school lunch programs. It's part of the Republican Study Committee's proposal that in 2024, that's part of what they're going to run on, banning school lunch programs like this. And you go, didn't I know something about feeding the hungry? Wasn't there something in that book that maybe the religious... And here's the thing. Maybe this could be the positive. Let me spin this positively. Maybe by government money funding religious education, maybe we'll get better Christians. Maybe you'll get better people out of this. Maybe people will be a little bit better and actually read the book. Maybe. I don't know. I doubt it, but you never know. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, what's on your mind?
Couple of things. Number one, I love the fact that, again, Trump's indicted. And I see Mark Meadows, and all the little squiggly, slimy attorneys of his. Oh, joy. Let's see what happens.
You mean the ones he didn't
By
pay?
The way, Gordon.
I got to tell you, if I'm him, I got to be worried. All the lawyers he stiffed over his career, you got to think some of them are going to turn on him.
That's true. Garden Crone, if you remember her from Twitter, she did say that she wanted to remind everybody that, told you this was going to happen. I don't know. She has her ways. And then the second thing that I wanted to get to talk about was, you know, they wanted to fund the public education because we no longer are indoctrinating them with the right-wing agenda. We're not pushing the religion. If you have the private schools, especially the religious schools, you can push the right-wing Christianity, and then you can also control what they learn, what they read. And when you do that, then you basically keep people ignorant. You know, this is what they did back in the Middle Ages, you know, right after the original Christian church, Catholic church, took over in the second century, which led to the downfall of Rome. This is what they did, you know, they started narrowing down what you could learn, and then all of a sudden they, you know, they came up with, well, nobody's allowed to read the Bible, and if we catch you reading the Bible, then you're going to be considered a heretic and burnt because we don't want you to know what it's saying. So I think they're just trying to take us back to the early 3rd century or 4th century. You know, I was stuck there on the Middle Ages for a while, but I think now they're going backwards.
We're regressing even further. I appreciate the thoughts.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Have
Alice.
A good evening, Greg. Yeah.
And that's the scary part in all this. I mean, the you can take this to a whole bunch of places. But here's the reality in this. You know, the fact that they are pushing their religion without actually pushing what their religion says. I mean, I look at the Republican Party's the Republican Study Committee's plans for 2024, ending school lunch programs, universal lunch programs. And there are a number of states across this country who have already done it. I mean, look at California, Colorado, Maine, Minnesota, New Mexico, Vermont, I guess, is on the move. There are another 21 states that are talking about doing some form or another. And they're going to try and use the federal government. Again, remember, these are the people who told us they believe in smaller, less intrusive government. They believe in states' rights. These are people who want to use the federal government as a bludgeon over top of all of this. And this is part of this weird kind of I'm not even going to call it religion or faith. I'm going to call it, you know, indoctrination. Especially when you start talking about all the other things that they want to do away with. You know, gutting Social Security and, you know, enriching the very wealthy, gutting Medicare, you know, all of the things that you just think are upside down. And we're in this weird, really alternative reality with the people who brought us alternative facts. The question is when do we, and is this trial that's coming up, will these trials expose this? You know, will people see Trump in his element, and will we Will we take what's being presented? Now, I guess it depends on which hat you wear, if it's the red hat or the blue hat. But for me, I've always said I will believe what's put into those courtrooms, into those court documents. When you put your hand on that book and say you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, under the threat of perjury, that's when it's real. All of the allegations and all of the stuff you see on the F channel and all of the social media stuff is all just noise. We are going to start seeing stuff under oath. And lawyers who know what that means. So I'm telling you, I think a big part of what we're going to start seeing, a lot of rats jumping ship and the Republican Party trying to save itself. Because right now, they're all indicted. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day IWW leader Frank Little was buried in Butte, Montana. Little had been lynched on August 1st by police agents thought to be working for the despised Anaconda Copper Company. He had arrived in town to help organize 14,000 striking copper miners. Devastated by the deaths of 168 miners in the June fire at Granite Mountain and Spectacular Mines, mine workers formed the Metal Mine Workers Union and walked off the job. Frank Little had previously worked as a hard rock miner and organizer for the Western Federation of Miners. He also took part in the free speech campaigns on the West Coast. Little was involved in early drives to industrially organize oil workers and lumberjacks. He voiced his opposition to the First World War and sought to stop workers from enlisting. When Little arrived in Butte in July, he worked to build strike support, picket lines, and spread the strike to other trades across the city. Early on August 1st, six masked men broke into the boarding house where he was staying. He was beaten and taken from his room. His assailants tied him to the bumper of their car and dragged him through the granite streets of Butte to the Milwaukee Bridge, where he was hanged. An ominous note was pinned to his bullet-ridden body with the words that read, "Others take notice, first and last warning." It included the numbers 3, 7, and 77, as well as the initials of other union organizers in the area. As many as 10,000 marched in his funeral procession. Days after his lynching, martial law was declared. Labor radicals were rounded up and charged with espionage. The miners' strike and union were crushed. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
When your political opponents push extremist public policies that would be disastrous for America, should you wring your hands in dread or applaud? Consider Project 2025. Put together by former Trump officials and the Koch brothers' network of billionaire plutocrats. Their strategy is to win the presidency next year by demonizing all environmental protections and promising to halt all national efforts to cope with the obvious crises of climate change. Their proposals include repealing regulations that curb fossil fuel pollution, terminating our nation's transition to renewable energy, shutting down all environmental protection agencies, encouraging more oil and gas use, and promoting the deadly delusion that global warming is not a real problem. Moreover, they intend to implement Project 2025 in the first 180 days of a right-wing Republican presidential term, obviously anticipating that Donald Trump will be that president. "We're not tinkering at the edges," brags a far-out right-wing group that instigated the scheme. "We are writing a battle plan and we are marshaling our forces." They've already drawn up a list of agencies and policies they'll begin eliminating on day one. And they've readied a list of some 20,000 right-wing henchmen to put on the federal payroll immediately to enforce their plan. If this sounds ludicrous, it is. But it's actually happening. For the Republican Party has decided to be ludicrous. As the director of Project 2025 told the New York Times, "This is where the conservative movement sits at this time." This is Jim Hightower saying, "Maybe, but it damn sure won't sit well with the American people, who are presently suffering the hellish ravages of our rapidly overheating climate. Indeed, here's a great chance for Democrats to demonstrate their bipartisan spirit by doing all they can to publicize the Republicans' Let It Burn global warming policy.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we come upon the one-year anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act, one of the things, the positive, is there are green energy projects all over the place. And I've had conversations with people over the last couple of years of going, well, you know, there's a transition period, and it's going to take too long, and there's always an excuse to not do it. But I look at how fast we're ramping this up with just a little bit of investment. I mean, if we as a nation really decided, you know, I saw Oppenheimer the other day, and it's one of these things, if we had that kind of mobilization where it doesn't matter, you want a town, we'll build you a town. If we had that kind of commitment, we could flip this in months, maybe early years instead of decades. But here to share some thoughts on the projects that are being built and what the Inflation Reduction Act has done to help us move in that direction, I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, the website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, it's great to be with you as always, sir.
You know, I go back to this and I've had these conversations. Well, you know, it's going to take too long to transition and, you know, we got to do this slowly and incrementally. I'm like, I don't know. I think we've got to buy in and we've got to move in that direction. If you want to get off of dirty fossil fuel and off of stuff from, you know, from people that we don't like us very much, maybe domestic production for domestic consumption is the way forward.
Yeah. Yeah. You're onto something there. And I'm glad you raised up Oppenheimer because it is, you know, when we, and obviously the outcome of that was a, you know, detonating a nuclear device to beat an opponent. But my general point is this: when we put our minds to something and when we invest in it, we can do extraordinary things in a short amount of time. I think about the Sputnik moment, right? When all of a sudden, you know, more than a generation ago, like the Soviets beat us to space. We got to do something. And we not only caught up, we surpassed them with breathtaking speed. And, you know, we built up the arsenal of democracy that way, you know, obviously developed that weapon of mass destruction that Oppenheimer and his crew were doing. But we've done amazing things when we've had the will and we've had the way. So it's not a surprise to me that we have seen a lot of this clean energy scale up take place really, really rapidly. And it's not only the Teslas you see on the coasts, but when I was doing this cross country trip, I saw a lot of F-150 Lightning pickup trucks in the Midwest that are fully electric. And I was pretty blown away. And I saw a lot of wind power for utilities. I saw a lot of solar farms for utilities. And, you know, some of this is invisible to people because it's like they're probably, the odds are that wherever you are in the United States, you might be getting at least 25%, if not more, of your energy right now, the electricity coming to your home from renewable sources. You don't even know it, but it's there. And so it is happening, and it is happening thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, the tax credits, the incentives, the investment in all of that. And this is where, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, but this is like, you know, for I think Democrats, they had the Sputnik moment about climate, and they're like, we're in an existential crisis. We got to do something for all the reasons you indicated and many others. So let's get this done. And, you know, they somehow finagled it with Joe Manchin, which is not easy to do, and got something over the finish line without a single Republican. And it is having a breathtaking impact. I mean, just the clean energy manufacturing tax credits alone are, you know, oversubscribed by what the estimate was by a factor of three. They're triple already what they thought would be. And this is just the early adoption, the pioneers. This isn't even the widespread scaling yet. It is really breathtaking in scope, Brett.
Right. And we had talked about, you know, the fact that China is, you know, so far ahead of us in these investments already. And the thing that blows my mind, and, you know, we're probably about the same age. I remember as a kid, you know, when Carter was president, put solar panels on the White House. And I remember during that period, you know, being a kid going, you know, the future could be, you know, this green stuff. We could solar panels everywhere. I mean, we could do so many great things. And then you had Reagan come in and destroy all that. And it's been all these years later that we're finally getting back to where we should have been in 1980, 1981. We're now basically starting over. But what's exciting to me is there seems to be a commitment to it. And it seems like regardless of what Republicans are doing, we're going in that direction.
Yeah. It is and the economics favor it now. I mean, in part because of this investment, but in part because of the scale, and in part just because of American innovation, can now generate, you know, wind power, solar panel, or solar power at a cheaper rate per kilowatt than we can with respect to coal or natural gas or nuclear. And so it's cost effective as well because it is renewable, right? I mean, it's like it is not a scarce resource, the wind or the sun, so which is awesome. Okay, so I think that is one thing. And the other thing, and I think this is also very important, is that you point this out. We have had to play catch up. I mean, the thing that really aggravates me is that we invented these technologies. I mean, we invented them. And some of them were federally funded in those federal labs that have done extraordinary things. And then we like literally gave away the keys to the rest of the world. And so China scaled much faster, European Union scaled much faster, and we've had to claw the manufacturing back. And it has been a slog. I mean, and every time we do something, the Europeans are like, well, you're discriminating against it. The Chinese are like, well, you're the biggest threat to the world trade system. And Republicans are saying, well, there's subsidies for this, ignoring the fact that they support them for oil and gas, by the way. But there, you faced all of these obstacles. Yeah, that's the, we're saying the quiet part out loud here. But they, you know, despite all of this, there's been remarkable success to the point that even the Republicans, well, all of them, who voted against the Inflation Reduction Act, you know, they sometimes show up at these ribbon cuttings for the solar factory.
It's amazing how that happens.
Or the wind turbine factory. And they're super proud of that. And you know, people are taking those jobs in red states, purple states, blue state, every state.
Yeah, this is one of my problems. This is why I say Joe Biden's a much better person than I am. Because, you know, mentally, I'm more in the line with, if you didn't support me, you don't support this. If you vote for people who voted against it, you shouldn't get any of it. Because that, and I know that's selfish of me, but it just seems like you didn't want it. You didn't vote for it. You said no. Right. You shouldn't benefit from it.
Yeah. I hear that. There will be a benefit to all of us from this. I think that's important to understand. I get your point. And I know that there was an analysis done that about 60% of the money for the clean energy manufacturing projects that have been distributed are going to Republican states. When you look at the manufacturing footprint of the United States, I would say that's not super surprising. It's politically awkward,
right?
To your point, Rick, but I do think that ultimately one of the things that this does, two things. Number one, Republicans who say, or their supporters who are watching Fox or whatever, who are saying, well, this is the government controlling the energy sector. Well, actually, if it was the government controlling it, to your point, they'd probably put it all in Democratic states. They're not. You know, it's the private sector that's making these decisions. And then number two, I do think that the more this is scaled up, the harder it's going to be for Republicans to try to eviscerate the Inflation Reduction Act or those components of it. Now, some may try, but it's going to be, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, as kind of crazy as she is, you know, she had a big solar panel company come to her district, showed up, all of that. So she's going to vote against that tax credit now for a place that's going to employ like 3,000 or 4,000 of her constituents. I find that really hard to believe.
No, I'm with you. But, you know, the thing that is, you know, I we've got solar panels on our house, and I've had a number of people over the years go, you know, how do you like them? You know, where the, and I said, they're great. You know, I mean, the reality is we produce about half of our electricity through these panels, and it was government incentives that helped us do that.
That's right.
The Sunshine Act here in Pennsylvania, and during the Obama years, there was some money to do this, so it made it affordable for us to do it, and it's, I'm shocked not everyone does, because it's not anything we have to jump over hurdles or do anything for, it's just using space we weren't using anyway to produce electricity that we need. It just seems like common sense. Even if you don't buy climate change, even if you don't care about, you know, fossil, it just seems to make a lot of sense.
Yeah, it sure does. And even given, I mean, you know, who over the last 5 years hasn't been part of a storm where you lost power for a considerable amount of time? Well, and if you have solar and battery backup, you're not going to have that issue about losing power. Basically, I think that's something that's important to understand. And the federal government, Rick, is doing everything it possibly can now to provide that consumer incentive to reduce the cost of manufacturing those panels, bring them to the United States. So there are a lot of jobs that are coming along with this. And unfortunately, it's now some state governments where oil and gas and, you know, Republicans who are zealously against some of this stuff try to put up these obstacles for residential solar panels. And so, but again, I think they're going to come down, and we're still, I mean, the thing that excites me is the growth curve for all of this has been way up, including, by the way, the manufacturing jobs. And we're just at the very beginning of this.
No,
so,
if we could catch up to China, because we showed this graph, I think, a couple of weeks ago, where, I mean, they're just like, you know, 4 or 5 times ahead of us. Amount of, you know, of capacity that they've built. If we could catch up, the jobs that we could create, the dirty stuff we wouldn't have to use. There are just so many positives. And also, if we could reclaim that manufacturing, we don't have to be dependent on China. Because I don't know if you've noticed, Scott, but China's got some problems.
Oh, they have. Yeah. They have a few problems. I mean, there's been a series of issues that go back to the pandemic and their handling and Xi Jinping's handling of this. But beyond that, and I think this is the important thing, there have been these structural problems in China for a long time. Basically, people don't trust the government. Surprise, surprise. They can't say that. But the way in which they express that is that they save a ton of money. They don't spend it on stuff. China's economic engine actually depends on like manufacturing, producing stuff. And the world is now sick of what China has been doing for a long time, which is dumping their employment problems. So everybody's wising up to this, and China's, you know, had to try to fire up its growth by investing in real estate with a bunch of deals that make Donald Trump's real estate investments look sophisticated and smart. And so that's going to come back to bite them. And so there are real problems here, but the takeaway for this is not that we don't have to worry about China. The takeaway is we actually have to worry about it more because of the, you know, the desire that Xi Jinping and the Chinese Communist Party is going to have to blame others for their own problems. And so that concerns me. And so I think that we're right in so many different ways to take a hard line on technology getting to China, on China's unfair trade practices, on not trusting China as an economic partner. Moving ahead, And so it's a anything the Biden administration, Congress are doing on this, they ought to keep on doing it. Yeah. But we got, yeah, there are problems across the Pacific.
No, I saw Paul Krugman's piece on China. Yeah. And what I found the one part interesting, he said the Biden administration has taken a very hard line on China, much harder in practice than Donald Trump, who talked tough, but mostly flailed around ineffectively. The U.S. government is now promoting semiconductor production to reduce dependence on China, trying to block exports of advanced silicone chips, and most recently banning high-tech investments in China. And you don't, most people don't know that Biden's doing anything because we're not talking about it. Well, the mainstream media is not talking about it because, well, you know, he's just not out there, you know, tweeting and bloviating and patting himself on the back.
Right. That's exactly right. And beyond that, and I know Krugman doesn't necessarily support this, but the tariffs that he's left on China, that Trump put into place, and I supported the tariffs. I know you did too, and so those are certainly having an impact as well. And so I think that is really, really important. And the difference is, and Krugman's right about this, is that it's a lot more strategic. And it's going to have a much more powerful impact now. And I know Biden's interested in reestablishing contact with China's leaders. And I understand that. But that doesn't mean that we need to backtrack on some of these policies. I think that they have to continue to articulate that, look, you've made your own bet here, and we're going to act in our own interests. We're not, you know, we have played this game before, and we've given you the benefit of the doubt every time, and that's no longer the case.
Yeah, you're like Lucy in the football, always pulling it away.
I mean, exactly like that.
But here's the thing, and this is where I give Biden credit. Look, he wasn't my first choice, but I think he's doing a great job. He came out the other day and said, look, you know, China's in a bad position, and when bad people are in bad positions, they do bad things. I don't know how much simpler he could put it, and I think that's what the globe is worried about.
Yeah. And so for those reasons, every time people criticize them for trying to talk to China, I think it's very important to do that, because we talk, I mean, Gorbachev and Reagan talked. It didn't make Reagan soft on communism at all for those of us who remember the Cold War. But I think having those lines of communications, but having a tough policy is really important. Yep. And that's the path I hope he continues to
take. Protecting national security by having a manufacturing base, especially in these, with these chips and all this. Good, smart policy, sound investment, something I've been calling for years. But Scott, as always, great stuff. I appreciate the time, the input, the expertise. I'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Of course. Can't wait. Thank you so much, Rick, for having me on. Appreciate it.
Outstanding. Our good friend Scott Paul. Make sure you check out their website, AmericanManufacturing.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at the fantastic work they do. Quick break, right back after this. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1989. That was the day that Jerry Horgan was killed while walking the picket line. Jerry was a chief steward for the Communication Workers of America Local 1103. The communication workers were on strike against telecom giant NYIAX Corporation, which became part of the present-day Verizon Company. At issue was management's proposal to shift a greater share of the healthcare costs onto the backs of workers. The strike wore on for a total of 17 weeks. In total, nearly 60,000 telephone workers in the Northeast participated in the walkout. These included both CWA members as well as members of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Jerry Horgan was part of the strike in the town of Valhalla, New York, about 25 miles north of New York City. Jerry was struck by a vehicle driven by a strikebreaker while walking the picket line. The driver was the daughter of one of the company's managers. She was never charged for hitting Jerry, although some at the scene claimed she accelerated after hitting him with her car. One witness, Charles Pierce, recalled that Jerry was run down like a dog. The CWA honors Jerry's memory by wearing red t-shirts. In 2010, a CWA article titled Why We Wear Red explained, quote, "The idea started small. We asked our members to wear red on Thursday to remind the company of the blood they had spilled and to show support for our fallen brother. But it quickly spread nationwide as a sign of solidarity every Thursday at CWA locations. Jerry Horgan was killed standing up for the rights of workers and fighting for a better tomorrow for all workers." Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. So President Biden tweeted out, we have to do more, but inflation is down to just over 3%. That is near its lowest point in over 2 years. And look, you know, we're moving in the right direction. I keep saying that. The sad reality is there's a lot of people still struggling. And what Republicans have done effectively is cut off the ability to reach out and help those folks, to have programs to help with homelessness and with hunger. In fact, you know, the attack on school lunch programs is a perfect example of what the GOP is known for, is what they're masterful at. And that is making people struggle, because they know when people are angry, when people are ticked off, they're pliable. That's the part that blows my mind. Now, what we now know is, you know, GDP is forecasting to be tracking about a 5% growth in quarter three. If you, according to the reports, if you exclude 2020, their forecast at this stage would have a standard deviation of, you know, 1.5. But their forecast at this stage, unbiased, is up. So all in all, 70% chance of growth between 2.5% and 5.5% in quarter three. Which means that, you know, growth is great. GDP is growing. We're moving in the right direction. Wages have to pick up. What's interesting is I spent, and I'm going to probably talk about this, you know, for the next couple of weeks. I've followed this guy who does these videos from Trump rallies, and they're really informative because he dresses up like a Trump supporter. He's got the hat. He's got the T-shirt. And he goes in and he questions people about what they're angry about. And this is truly, it's what we've been talking about for the longest time. The fact that he gets them to say what's really the problem is incredible to me. For instance, you had these couple of old ladies that he was talking to, and you go, what's the biggest problem? Well, you know, prices are through the roof and wages haven't kept up. He goes, well, should you raise the minimum wage? And they're like, of course we should be raising the minimum wage. And he goes, but Republicans are standing in the way of that. Would you support the Democrats who want to raise it? And they're like, and they're now stuck because you've just hit them with reality that Republicans don't want to raise wages, but they've got the costume on. And the weird thing is they feel like they're in a safe space with this guy because he's got the same costume. And they start talking about how, you know, life is a struggle. Wages haven't kept up. Their health care sucks. That, you know, life is hard. And this is where I keep coming back to, where Democrats have to go out and push progressive politics, push the progressive policies that are wildly popular. Even if progressives are not, this is one of those moments where you go, look, the pain, the struggle, the suffering, it's very real. The question is how do you address that? How do you get them to listen? How do you get these people who are struggling to actually listen and pay attention? That to me is is central to all of this. How do we get people to admit what has got them angry, admit what has them riled up, and then address it? Because Republicans they're never going to address those problems. When it comes to making lives better for working people, they are never going to help. There's never a moment where you're going to go, a Republican policy made working people's lives better. What's got these folks in is, well, they're angry at the other. They're angry at them. They're angry at whatever the red meat that they've been fed, whatever the outrage candy is.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming.